Transcending the Mind, Chapter 11. As this movement acquires more of intensity and depth, the workers should raise themselves to higher and higher levels and should go deeper into the realm of spiritual thought. This is the process leading to the elimination of all differences and to the purification of the heart. What Bapu used to do when two persons had differences was to summon them to his presence and coming down to their level to discuss the issue with them for hours and hours. Sometimes he succeeded, sometimes he did not. This is one method, but not a very effective one. It would not work well in the age of science, for it is mental in nature. What comes to the forefront in the age of science is objective, impersonal truth. It matters little what is there in somebody's mind. Both science and self-knowledge subordinate mind as compared with the universe. Spirituality demands that mind should transcend itself. Science also makes the same demand. What then is to be done in cases of mental differences? These can be counteracted only by indifference. We have not yet realized the power of indifference. In fact, we can be effective only if we act from a plane higher than the mental. Sri Aurobindo therefore used to speak about the supramental. It is not proper that one should remain content with the nectar of divine realization. Even such a person takes on a new life. Most of us are reborn under the weight of our karmas. That is not of any consequence. But when a person comes down, even after he has drunk to his satisfaction the nectar of divine realization, and has raised himself above the mental plane, the process involved is called by Sri Aurobindo the process of descent. Liberation is not the end. A new program of action begins. According to Sri Aurobindo, after liberation and after the transcendence of the mental, this is the plane of the supramental. So long it was thought that a liberated person could not descend even if he wanted to. He would be, in that case, absorbed in liberation. Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, however, makes this of secondary importance. Others, like Shankara, say that there should be no return after liberation. For Sri Aurobindo, however, liberation of moksha rather qualifies a person for the service of mankind. One cannot serve in the true sense so long as one has not attained liberation, for otherwise there is always the chance of doing something wrong. Likewise, we have to ask if we possess the strength necessary for bringing about a change in society and change of heart. One has to attain liberation, moksha, in order to acquire that strength. Even that is not enough. One has to experience the divine and thereby to reach the supramental plane. But then he should descend from that height on the plane of worldly existence in order to change life with the help of his thoughts. He has to divinize the entire society. This is a grand philosophy. For the present, even if we cannot aspire to descend after reaching that sublime height, nevertheless, it is necessary that we should at least rise above the mental plane. Otherwise, we cannot remove stain from society, and we would have to continue lubricating the social machinery from outside to lessen the tension. The structure of the social machinery ought to be such that it would not generate any friction and hence would need no lubrication. No bone jars with another in this body of ours. There is a natural cooperation that pervades the entire structure. The hand hastens without delay to help no sooner than the foot suffers a prick. If the social machinery is similarly organized, the oil can would be rendered useless. I have just now made mention of Sri Aurobindo's philosophy. We ought to be acquainted with the thoughts of such great men. We should not be totally ignorant of the thought currents of the world. We should know what is new in them, what would be their possible influence on people, and also what we could accept from them. In Mysore, the other day, I asked Sri Puttappa how he could write such great epic in this age. He replied, "This indeed is the age for epics in India. Nowhere else in the world were so many great men born within the last 50 years as in India. We have here, therefore, just the age for epics. It is therefore wrong to think that the age of science is not suitable for poetry. This age continues to reveal more and more of the mysteries of creation. In ancient times, men, no doubt, knew less of these mysteries. Science, it is usually supposed, concerns what is known, whereas poetry concerns the unknown and the mysterious. But the ancient man was not aware of the range of this mysterious, and the scope of poetry was correspondingly limited. In fact, the more the mysteries of creation shall come to be revealed, the more room there would be for poetry. The age of science is, therefore, especially favorable towards poetry." Pandavapuram, 30th of September, 1957.